tapes, bus eating high from Jay. Up in the sky, scrape on top of the world. Back is up against the wall, gun brawl. Kid, I end up for all y'all. Trying to stop the dope from flowing. Spotless rock blowing, shots are blowing. Pop the sheet line growing, waistline the clock is showing. We keep it thugged out, who not knowing, get your knife blown in.
Yo, yo, Bob Digital and Cool G Rap. We set the booby trap. African ways with the gad, that's how the doobie rap. Derelict mind crabs, you rapping for a Scooby snack. Foul tongue bitch, you bound to lick my booty crack. Rebel pellet, spray tech, sound mix no A-Mex. Heavy slap on my snare drum, son, could break necks. You get yanked up and spanked up, your face shaked up. Who the fuck raise your rank up? I'm on your take up. Pop the lock on the cop handcuff. Puff a Dutch of dust, bust the jump up and snuff out the judge. Fuck a cell block, flat top caps in the mailbox. Terry Bone Birds, stash block in the nail shop. On the strip, took a sip, twist the L top. The guard you, son, feel like a third rail shot. The gold crossbone, durag, universal flag. Blasted the turbo charge, a purple herbal drag. Known for the W, carry a double two in the shoe. Iron's the rubber noose in the bubble goose. Pulling soap in oil, high heat with flame boil. Wu-Tang slang, got vein, makes your brain coil. Shaolin guards, we know the stat kicks. Desert Queen Project, Sunday bake cakes. Uptown, Pelon dogs, you make cakes. Cold Medina sons, they know in the day cakes.
We rapping Wu-Tang, we let tubes bang. That's how we do things, that's how we move things. Truth, paper, two in the brain.
Well, I guess we should start off with congratulations over here. Since your boys, the Patriots, came through with the stellar defensive play and against the tremendous play calling of one Peter Carroll.
So was it a better defensive play or was it a worse play calling?
Well, I'm hearing it's the worst play call of all time.
From who? Your boy Chris Collinsworth?
Did he say that? I heard it from several people.
Your boy Dion did. We all know how you're a big proponent of Dion.
he probably had an inside source to let him know that. I thought it was a great defensive play because, I mean, he didn't have much room to react, and he totally outfought that receiver for the ball. I mean, he reacted really quickly.
I just want to say a couple things. I'm going to ask you another question about that. So I never realized that the Patriots and Giants played each other twice in the Super Bowl. I didn't realize there was an actual helmet catch before.
Okay.
You know? So them winning the Super Bowl just made me realize they played the Giants twice in the Super Bowl. They lost the Giants twice, not just once.
Okay, because
wasn't there a year where the Super Bowl didn't happen? And that was the year that the Patriots played the Giants. You're not following, huh? So basically,
unless you're trying to make this this Tom Brady's better than Joe Montana argument,
I would never make that.
How
could you say those words to me?
I just don't know.
How could you say that you're saying
you don't remember?
That is a hell of a thing for you to say to me.
I mean, you don't remember these two Giants games. I can't.
Well, I also until the Yankees won the last World Series, I never realized that they were up 3-0 to the Red Sox, and the Red Sox came back and beat them in a 7-game series. I never realized that happened either.
Is this similar to the same way that I never realized that Kirk Gibson allegedly hit a home run off Dennis Eckersley some day in the past?
He did?
I don't know.
What was this?
A lot of rumor and innuendo.
So I'm happy because now it's like, you know, 4-2 in the Super Bowls for the Patriots and for Tom Brady is a lot better than 3-3 or 3-2. It was a long time coming. But I would never say that he's better than Joe Montana. Joe Montana is the best quarterback of all time. Granted, different eras and this, that, and this, but when it comes down to it, the one guy that I want in crunch time is still Joe Montana. But number two would be Tom Brady. So I'll say that Tom Brady is probably the second best quarterback of all time, but he's not the greatest of all time. That's still Joe Montana territory right there. But here's the other thing, too. So, like, when that clock's winding down, and I'm literally, you got to realize, like, I've had to endure, like, two crazy catches, you know, circus catches that, you know, lost them this, that, and this, and then Wes Welker missing that open pass that he should have got to seal that Super Bowl.
The overthrow.
Well, it wasn't an over, not the touchdown. It was the one where they were trying to get a first down.
And he, like, kind of had a, like,
he had a turn.
Stretch and jump backwards.
Yeah. It was a tough catch, but, I mean, Wes Welker makes that catch 9 out of 10 times. But so I'm sitting there just like, I can't believe, you know, Chris makes that catch. I was like, dude, I'm like, are you kidding me, dude? It's the same stadium, same stupid catch that's just like a unbelievable catch. And Butler played that pass perfectly, dude. Knocked it away and then he gets that thing. So that they're running it down and stuff, and then Marshawn runs for the goal line, and Dante Hightower makes one of the best plays I've ever seen. Like, if you watch that play, he goes in between, like, he has to battle a defender, and then he just gets, like, his hand on the guy's leg and makes a stop there. So the clock's winding down, and I'm yelling at Dolchikov, I'm like,
call the timeout.
And then they throw the pass play, and I'm like Richard Sherman, you know, but the other way, you know. So you take that Richard Sherman face where he has that moment of glee, and it turns into, like, this big crying face. Yeah. It was opposite for me. So basically,
the shooter McGavin look, right?
Yeah, shooter. <It's> no. So I totally think that pass is going to get caught, and then Butler comes in and catches it. I literally stand up and I walk out of the room. I mean, I couldn't believe it. But here's the other thing. I purposely think that I don't think Belichick. People are saying Belichick was making a mistake this and that, but I think, you know, you look at it, and after a while, Seahawks were really rushed at the end, and all the pressure was really on them. And I think Belichick not calling that timeout really put the pressure back on the Seahawks, and I think they kind of...
Yeah, well, I think that's exactly what happened. I think they realized that they had to run a play, and they weren't expecting to have to, and then I think they just overthought it, and this is exactly what they did. And then Carroll kind of trying to come out and explain away and kind of rationalize that play is pretty laughable.
He took some meth right before that. that guy was talking way too fast, dude.
It was the gum.
It was the gum.
It was
the nicotine gum.
Yeah. It had the greenies in it.
Well, so I'm watching this game, and they're down by 10, and it was after Brady threw that second interception. And I was like, man, I'm like, God, this guy, I can't believe this. You know, this is going to be a blowout. And what really kind of gave me a glimmer of hope was, so they just get the interception, and Carroll's talking to Russell Wilson, and he just has, this big old smile on his face. You know, they're all happy and stuff, and it's like, you got to go for the kill right there. And they never really went for the kill, dropped some passes here and there, and then, of course, Tom Brady becomes Joe Montana-like and does two touchdowns. And I watched the replay last night, and I'm thinking, start of the fourth quarter. That's when
the whole game, or
just the third and fourth quarter, and because they were replaying on NFL Network, and so fourth quarter starts. And I was like, okay, this is where they scored a touchdown. Well, I think they went through 2-3 and outs. Still, they didn't start their comeback until 7 minutes in, and it was just great. I mean, it was nice to be on the side of a fluke play that shouldn't have happened, and it was the Patriots this time around, so. It was good. I was over effing whelmed, Al Pacino would say in Heat.
And did your girls enjoy the halftime show? Since,
So my oldest one only watched the first maybe 5 minutes of the game, and then during halftime they watched the halftime show, and then they bounced after that. So very good. Commercials are terrible.
Win.
Yeah. Not win. Can't live with
watching the halftime show and then peacing out. I wasn't really watching them that much because I was in and out checking on the pork butt that I was smoking. But from the commercials I saw, actually, in a way, I didn't mind them. Just in the last few years, I don't know, some of these commercials have just gotten so over the top that they're not even funny or entertaining. They're just trying to wait too hard to make an impact. And I felt like some of the commercials, just in their simplicity, were pretty good. I really like the house favorite right now is the lead.
You really like the one where the kid said, "But I died." That's their favorite one.
See, I didn't even see that one. and then I heard about it the next day. But no, the Liam Neeson Clash of Clans commercial was awesome.
That was tight. Yeah, that was a good one.
And the Heisenberg one was pretty good too, at the pharmacy. Mm-hmm. But I think the Liam Neeson one takes the cake, man. That's Buffet Boy 632. I will get my revenge, Angry Neeson.
49 or whatever it was.
Liam Neeson. It's Liam. He just played it perfectly, man. So I don't know. It's funny,
Have you watched his new foray into action adventure stuff? Have you seen Taken and
I've seen the Taken movies.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean,
you've never seen Taken?
I've never seen Taken. No.
Oh man, you're
damn homie.
You know you didn't fuck up now, right? Dude, Taken is awesome.
There's no reason why I haven't seen it. I just, you know, I haven't seen it. I just beat it.
You hooked up with some smart guys in the joint and read some books. I'm disappointed in you now, man. You gotta see Taken.
Well, you never told me to see it, dude. When there's movies that I see, I'm like, hey, you should go see this movie.
I thought that one was a given, man. Nah, Taken's awesome. At least you at least know the classic conversation he has on the phone, right? It's like one of the best. That's one of the best. maybe soliloquies in cinematic history.
It wouldn't be a soliloquy, because a soliloquy has to be a certain amount of syllables and stuff and everything.
Oh, it has to fit into it.
It'd be known as a monologue.
A monologue?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's close. It may not be exactly, because it's a phone conversation.
It's funny that I'm telling a teacher, you know, about how it can't be a soliloquy, but...
Teach language.
I ain't be doing that. You talk about skins all the time. All right. So, anything else you want to talk about the Super Bowl? Are we good? Is there anything that irks your ire or anything that you must need to talk about?
Well, nah. Because you start talking about irking my ire, and then I'm gonna get into the whole like 49ers debacle. So let's just not get into wrestling, because actually. I thought that was like one of the best Raws I've seen in a long time.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was a really good Raw.
Okay, so what did you think about their decision? And did you think that was legit to kind of take away Roman Reigns' title shot? I mean, not taking it away, but just kind of hitting the reset button. I mean, do you think it's a case where, do you think they're going to do it to have Roman Reigns like legitimately win it and to try like maybe take away kind of all the boos that were there? Do you think Roman Reigns still has the inside track to headline?
I don't know that. It could be a coin toss. I mean, it could. I mean, that if there's any way for them to ever show that, yeah, we listen to fans, it could be to give that shot to Daniel Bryan.
Would you be okay with that?
I think I'd be okay with it. I don't think I'd like it. But... You know, I wouldn't have had any problem if Daniel Bryan had won the Rumble. So that being said, I think it'd be okay.
Here's a question I had.
But it does kind of
before that.
Okay, well, just before you ask your question, I say it does kind of render the Royal Rumble pointless, and that would be the worst thing. But it's not like they've never had the person that win the Rumble still have to go on and win matches to get their spot in Mania. It's not like it's never been done. But go ahead.
Do you think it was a case, and I'm not, so, I mean, I knew Daniel Bryan wasn't picked to win the Rumble, but do you think he got out so early because maybe he couldn't go? You know, maybe they're still trying to protect him and not have him do, like, a epic run? And I mean, there's ways he could have handled that. I mean, of course they wouldn't know that the Philly crowd would react the way that they did, but...
They probably should have, though. I mean, it's Philadelphia, so you know they're going to go over the top for anybody that has any kind of indie cred.
Do you think he was fit enough to do, like, say, like a full, like, 30 or 40 minutes of that match?
There's no way to determine that. He seemed to have pretty decent wind in the match against Rollins, so...
I'm not talking about wind, I'm talking about, like, with his neck and stuff.
I would say, yeah. I mean, again, referencing that Rollins match, I mean... He took some pretty serious bumps, and he kept on going. So, I mean, I don't think they'd be having him wrestle if he wasn't completely cleared. They held him out long enough. There's no gain. And then you could probably make an argument it would have been better for WWE and Roman Reigns and this road to WrestleMania if they really wanted to give Reigns this push. It would have been in their best interest probably to keep Daniel Bryan out of the Rumble. So, I don't think they would... be rushing him back if he wasn't fully healthy with a neck, especially considering it kind of like it really turned out to be probably the biggest thing that you know made people turn against Roman Reigns in the first place. So no, I gotta believe he was fully healthy. I think I don't know what they thought, honestly, if they thought like trying to sneak him out really quick and unexpectedly was gonna make people just forget, and they were hoping that by 20 or 30 minutes later down the line, people weren't going to be thinking about Daniel Bryan exiting that early.
So who do you want to win? Who do you want to win at Fastlane?
No, I want Reigns to win, but and I wanted him to win the Rumble, but I'm not gonna be like I want to be like what we were kind of railing against last week when we went and kind of told people that we're like, well, if Daniel Bryan doesn't win, then it's dumb and the whole thing was bad and pointless. I think there's multiple possible outcomes that could work. I think Reigns was one. I think Daniel Bryan is one. So if at the end of the day you get either one of those guys at the main event in Mania, then I think it's okay. I feel that it would negatively impact the importance of the Rumble, which is something that they should be trying to protect. And it very well could be just a device to try to have Roman Reigns win the right way at Fastlane. But it also could be, as I was kind of saying last week, it also could be like a vehicle to get Roman Reigns to get some heel heat, right? Because there's no bigger face than Daniel Bryan. So if he goes and if he starts going desperate measures and beats him kind of underhandedly, I mean, it could even move further him into the direction of being a heel. So, like, I think there's a lot of directions they can go in.
It's not always that one thing where we talk about hope. You know, we hope that they do this, we hope to do that. What you just said sounds very, very good storyline-wise.
Sounds very hopeful.
Yeah, it does sound very hopeful because, you know, they're not going to do that. You know, it's just kind of, you know, a thing where I think they want everybody in their place, and so they know, you know, so there's no kind of, especially on the road of WrestleMania where there's no kind of X factors, and I think they, you know, they want to put everybody in a box, and that's the way it is. I'm getting kind of tired of Daniel Bryan really kind of pandering to the crowd, you know, just going like, yo, I'm here because of you fans. It's like, come on, dude. I'm like, you don't need to do that. You know, like, you're fine enough on your own. I like the kind of the whole play that him and Roman Reigns had where Daniel Bryan goes into the locker room and starts talking and stuff, and Roman says, hey, you know, you need to get out, this and this. I thought matches overall in that Raw were very good. That's not even the match I want to get into. But I kind of saw it coming. I didn't want to like that match at the end just because I didn't like the same
Rollins things. And Bryan?
Yeah. Hold on, let me pontificate, okay, on the extrapolation of my theorem. I didn't like it because the same thing, like I didn't like how they took away Roman Reigns' spot. You know, he earned that title shot, and I didn't like how they just blew it all up to kind of appease the fans. It's like, you know, if you're gonna say like one thing like well, John Cena needs to win because we know better than what the wrestling, you know, we know better than wrestling fans, then you don't need to do that with Roman Reigns either. It adds a nice little wrinkle to everything. So I'm watching the Seth Rollins match and Daniel Bryan, not wanting to like it. And I think I think it changed when Daniel Bryan did the backdrop off the top rope. And then I was all in. And so I'm watching the match, and then I'm going, okay, so Seth Rollins screwed over Roman Reigns, so Roman Reigns is going to come out, and Daniel Bryan will win that way. But the payoff was good. That spear that he put on the Big Show was one of the best spears I've ever seen in my life.
And the one he put to it with, I think, was Mercury, was equally as good.
Yeah.
I mean, he had, like, full extension, and...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he... Like, that was... And that's the thing, too, is, like, they keep on... Well, I guess, you know, granted that the first one was against the Big Show, okay, but then... At least, like, he finally got something worthwhile happening out of that feud because they continue to put him in singles matches with the Big Show. And it's like, if you're trying to get the people behind him, and especially the people that are, say, on the smart side that want to see a really good match, you're not doing this guy any favors. Like, even going back to SmackDown, right?
I want to talk about that match, too.
Well, it wasn't just that match, but it's just, like, the way that, again, I'm thinking about, like, the way the internet reacts and... They're going to, like, say, like, oh, everything that Daniel Bryan does is good, and now everything Roman Reigns does is bad. It's like, both those guys were put in impossible situations. A shitty casket match against Kane, and a shitty match with Reigns and Big Show. But
the casket match.
Yeah. I mean, I think Reigns' match with Big Show was much better. But the thing is, I mean, neither one of them's a great match, and people don't really realize, like, I mean, how much just... constantly going back to the well with Kane and, and Big Show was kind of hurting these two guys.
Well, I didn't have a problem. Well, I had a problem. I didn't have a problem with the casket match. I thought the casket match was decent. I mean, it wasn't the best thing, but it was the first time I saw Kane work like a good, decent match in a long time. I thought what they did with the casket match, instead of like kind of having like Mankind or Undertaker or Kane in it, where you know, it's kind of like you chokeslam the guy through the stuff. And I like I appreciated the element of the casket and the way they were using it. I thought it worked really well. What I didn't like was I didn't like Roman Reigns versus the Big Show, especially when Roman Reigns tried to do when he's on the ropes and he has his legs on the wrapped around the Big Show's neck and he tries to do a Hurricane Rana. That was really weak. And I'm sitting there going like, well, if you want people to start liking Roman Reigns again, don't put him in that element. I mean, they should have protected him more instead of doing like a half-assed move like that, because it didn't pull off well at all.
Right.
And it just looked really forced. Mm-hmm. And the whole problem is that everybody's saying that Roman Reigns is forced. Mm-hmm. So that you put him in situations where he's forcing moves. So I didn't like that match. But I thought the casket match was decent. I mean, I wasn't standing up and down and jumping up and down, but I thought it was nice. It was kind of like the whole Adam Rose thing, right? Where Adam Rose was like a smidgen of personality. Kane showing a small part of what he used to be able to do when he was in his prime. I thought it worked pretty well.
I didn't. I think casting matches are kind of lame overall. And I thought that match was pretty bad. And just the whole thing with the guy sitting halfway in a casket and someone else kind of just standing over in between the middle ropes trying to kick him or lean down and punch him just to get him to lay down a casket. I thought the whole thing was pretty neat. Granted, like, watching a regular match with Kane is boring. I think maybe just the novelty of seeing Kane do a gimmick match as opposed to the same old boring matches he's been putting on is Adam Rose-esque in that way, but I'm not really going to give it any credit to say it was a better match than the Reigns and Big Show match. And I'm not saying that was any great match, but I would rather see a straight match with those two guys than a casket match. It's just a gimmick I'm not interested in. but again, so you go give, I'm just saying, you give like those two guys, put them in pretty much situations that they can't really succeed in the matches they're on SmackDown. And then you turn around and then on Raw, you put Roman Reigns in the same situation, but you give Daniel Bryan like an absolute opportunity to shine. I mean, you rarely do either one of those two guys have a bad match. I mean, that's probably could be your early leader for match of the year. And like anytime those two, I mean, so far.
I disagree.
No, okay, sorry. The triple threat match, but aside from that, it's probably the best match Raw's produced in this calendar year.
I totally just you're forgetting the match that was
Dolphin Bray.
Dolphin Bray was way better, I think.
I don't know that it was way better. It's
Dolphin Bray was tight.
Yeah. It was a great match. And for me, I mean, that's a big reason why this Raw was so good. Like pretty much every match that they had was actually a good match. So
Dolphin Bray was way better than Seth Rollins and
I don't know about that. But
it's one-on-one. You don't have people running in. Here's a couple of problems I had with the Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins match. It's like you have Big Show at one end of the ring, and Daniel Bryan keeps on running off the ropes and doing big moves. I'm getting tired of the suicide dive. I think it's
too many people are doing it.
Yeah.
And it's not like. It's not like it takes any great athleticism to do.
Yeah.
And at the end of the move, realistically, all it is one guy jumping out and pushing somebody.
Yeah. I really think the suicide dive started spawning when CM Punk was doing it, but he was doing the elbow outside. I mean, that was really good. And Daniel Bryan, when he was first starting to do it, you know, it's like because it was part of his whole intensity type match, so it really worked with him. This one they felt like spots, especially when Seth Rollins, especially when Seth can do a whole lot more than a suicide dive. You know, when he's doing a flip and he's landing on his feet and stuff. I mean, I'd much rather see that. But logically, how many times did Daniel Bryan run to the ropes where Big Show was?
Because it just tripped him up.
He can't trip him up. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing, and so they show the second angle of the suicide dive. and Big Show runs away from Daniel Bryan while he's running through the ropes. And it's like, okay, was he doing that because he thought that Daniel Bryan was going to give him a suicide dive? I mean, it wasn't...
That's the way I took it.
But you have to sit there and think, is that why he's doing it? Without, you know, Daniel Bryan didn't do anything while he was running to make you think that he was going to do it. So it's just, it just didn't, logically didn't make a lot of sense to me with that.
Oh.
And it wasn't until the backdrop when I started, okay, you know, now they're starting to show what they can do, and I'm sitting there going, it did the job because it's preparing you for Fastlane, because you know that Daniel Bryan can have a good match with anybody. You know Seth Rollins can have a good match with anybody. So now it's like, okay, so what is Daniel Bryan going to do with Roman Reigns now? Because I can't see the same type of match that he did with Seth Rollins, but I know that he can have Daniel Bryan can have a good match with John Cena.
Well,
so.
I mean, I thought that in those kind of waning times before the Shield split up, and before Daniel Bryan had gotten hurt, when they're having a little bit of, there was like a series of Daniel Bryan was kind of wrestling everybody from the Shield. They had a one-on-one Raw main event last year, somewhere in the middle of the year. I thought it was a great match. I think they already know that those guys have good ring chemistry. They had a tremendous match that I remember somewhere in the middle of Raw last year. So I don't have any doubt that those guys can put on a good one too. So I'm not too worried either way. Yeah, it's like, I know, and then I'm sure we'll can already kind of predict the narrative that Daniel Bryan carried the match, and he had the match with the ladder, right, instead of the match with Roman Reigns kind of talk. But Roman Reigns, like, was every part of that match that the two of them had. So, I mean, it's going to be good. Either way it shakes out, it's going to be good. And the matches between anything that they do, Daniel Bryan and Rollins, I mean, you have to see that match as, like, possibly... any match those guys have could be the best match of the year, right, whenever they have it. So, I mean, I thought it was a great match. I thought Dolph Ziggler and Bray was right there with them. But I'm just good that, like, they had a show that was mostly carried by the matches that were on it, which you don't get from Raw all the time, and especially heading towards WrestleMania. It's usually more about the promos and things like that.
Yeah, no, I think introducing Fastlane as a new pay-per-view to kind of set up storylines or set up WrestleMania, I think it's a good idea on their part. When they first introduced Fastlane, I was like, ah, screw this. But what Raw delivered at the end, and it's like, okay, this is starting to work out really good. The Dolph and Bray Wyatt match. So when Bray puts the Sister Abigail on him, Dolph just put on like a big move, didn't he? I mean, he just like did. I don't know if it was like the Famouser that
I
he
think
did.
It was a Famouser.
And then Bray just jumps up and does. I mean, what did you think about that? I mean, I thought it was great. I thought the storytelling was great.
Yeah, I'm all right with it because I think Bray's shown that he can do that. And the thing is, I think the in that kind of instance, like that's one of the things that makes a lot of these Dolph Ziggler matches really good is, even though he has these pretty much high impact moves, the fact that he's generally given up 50 pounds to somebody, if they're going to pop up really quick, you know, it makes it believable because, you know, he doesn't have a whole lot of weight behind, like, you know, a really good Famouser like he's got or things like that. So I really didn't have a problem with the way it ended. I thought it was pretty good. I thought Dolph sold the thing pretty well also. But overall, I thought that was a great match. Both of those guys got all their spots in, and talk about, like, you know,
because I see that match as, you know, we gave match of the year to Bray Wyatt and Daniel Bryan. I thought that match, it wasn't as good as the storytelling wasn't as good in itself because they didn't have the time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, I mean, I think it's pretty on par with that match. I mean, and it's exciting for me to see because it just shows that Bray is more, you know, substance than he is fire, you know, or flash. And he can put on a good match as well. And of course, we all know Dolph can put on great matches also. So it was good to see that. The other match that I actually kind of enjoyed too was I enjoyed Ryback and Luke Harper. Even though Harper lost, I thought Luke did a lot of stuff in that match where you're just sitting there going like, dude, what is it? Who is this guy? And so that's why he was so close for me to being Wrestler of the Year. I mean, his agility and athleticism, and there's something else, dude. And you knew that he was gonna lose, but he carried that match too. I mean, he made Ryback look like $1 million in that match.
Yeah, actually, I think Ryback's been doing all right the last few weeks, and even I can't remember exactly when it was, but there was even a promo he did within the last couple of weeks that I thought was.
This is your life, Ryback, where he starts.
No, no, that was terrible. But there was one after that that I thought was actually reasonable. So I think Ryback's actually.
Is he turning the corner for you, or what?
Not turning the corner, but he's showing improvement more than Adam Rose.
What are you talking about? He told his people to come in the ring and sell it.
Yeah,
and they didn't want to do it.
That was tremendous.
You're still sick, huh? Like it's like 3 weeks running, right?
I don't feel sick. It's just cough is lingering a little bit. That's all. It's all good.
You're going to talk about Luke Harper?
Yeah, I mean Harper's great in the ring. Harper is awesome, and it's kind of one of those things where. Traditional wrestling, WWE, they like these guys that are really jacked and yoked and built, and Harper isn't necessarily that, but, I mean, I don't look at those guys and watch them perform and think for a second that, like, Ryback is any stronger than Luke Harper, and Luke Harper is, like, 100 times the worker that Ryback is, so it was a good match, and I think, like, having a guy like Harper, I think it's such a benefit to the WWE, because when you want to put a guy like Ryback into a match where he's not facing someone that he's just physically going to dominate over, a lot of times you're going to end up with a guy who isn't a good worker, right? And that's probably why you get so much Kane matches, right? Because they want to put Kane in a match that he's kind of a very tired storyline, but Kane's so much bigger and stronger going against a small guy. Oh, how does Daniel Bryan overcome the odds, even though he's beat him the last 80 times they fought? But you put a match against Harper and Ryback, you got a guy that can carry the workloads, basically a ring general, but he's not really giving up any mass to make you think, like, oh, he's overmatched. And like, it's rare you have a true, true worker like Harper that has that physical stature that you can, like, put against your other guys that are pretty big and strong and not the best workers and make them look good.
So what's this guy's future then? Because the couple things I want to say is Big Show and Roman Reigns, they don't have chemistry. And it has nothing to do with Big Show's work. It has nothing to do with Roman Reigns' work. They just do not work well together. Mm-hmm. I think Big Show versus Daniel Bryan, I think those would be great matches. Not because Daniel Bryan is that much better of a worker, but there's... Big Show plays off a lot better with Daniel Bryan, and when Daniel Bryan beats Big Show, that's kind of like a big thing. You know, Roman Reigns being Big Show, since they both kind of have overpowering movesets and everything, it there's no drama to it. Mm-hmm. The question I ask, though, is two things. How come they're not putting Luke Harper with Daniel Bryan or with Roman Reigns? And where do you see Luke Harper's future? Because I just feel this is going to be one of those things where he's going to be a mechanic and he's never really going to accomplish anything. What do you kind of see with that?
Yeah, I think that's about what it is. I don't think he could ever have any breakout success as a singles guy unless he has a character change. And I like the character that he is. And I think that's kind of one of the reasons why I really agree with what you said, and that there was no reason to split up the Wyatts, because that made everything work, right? Him as a solo guy, he's just going to be a guy that can put on really good matches, mechanic, when you want to have some kind of ladder match with six guys in it, you throw that guy in there, and you know he's going to make everybody look good, and then he's not going to win it in the end. Probably he has a career path somewhere along the lines of a Jack Swagger. Physically, I'd say they're pretty similar in the combination of size and athleticism.
I think Luke Harper is way, way more entertaining to watch.
But I'm just saying they have the same spot in that because they're both really big, but they're athletic and they can work. You're always going to have a place for them. But I think Harper's definitely more talented than Swagger is.
See, when Swagger loses, it's like kind of like he loses again. When Luke Harper loses, he doesn't really lose anything.
But that's because they've been doing this to Swagger for 4 years now. Harper's still new. We haven't seen Harper go through the bad stretch when he's losing a lot, right? And it's very easy to take a guy like Swagger, and without him changing much of his character, make him in a tag team with somebody, put him with a manager, do this or that. But with Harper, like, that character isn't going to work with a manager. And it probably, unless there's a character with similar motivation, it's not going to work well as a tag team unless they try to do some kind of stupid comedy tag team like they did with, like, King and Daniel Bryan, which worked, right? But that would be the only way. You have, like, a total... You had to have somebody that's similar to Harper, or you have somebody that's the polar opposite and make it, like, a kind of silly tag team. But Harper doesn't... I'd like him as a serious threat, as a serious competitor.
Okay, so to switch it up real fast, because I want to get your output on this. The Miz and Mizdow, what'd you think?
Again, it's like the same mistake that... Same mistake that WWE makes year after year. You get into WrestleMania season where it's a premium on programs that you can have going forward and a premium on, like, on TV time and a real premium on how many tag teams that you have that are legitimate. And then you're going to split up a tag team that's working when you don't have a whole lot of depth in that division, A. And B, you don't have room on the card for Miz Sandow. I mean,
you don't think there's room on the card at WrestleMania for Miz and Sandow?
Pre-show, maybe.
Pre-show.
I mean, I just don't think. I think you play it out longer, and ultimately you have the split. But I just think this is the worst time of the year to split up tag teams because, one, I don't think that a feud between those guys has 3 months worth of legs, and two, it's just going to get buried down the card anyway, and three, again, you're weakening your tag team division that's already, like, basically, you know, on a machine, keeping its life going. I don't know why they keep splitting tag teams at this point in time.
So with tag teams, because we're talking about that tag team, so you have Cesaro and Kidd.
Let me finish. I have one more thought. Okay. The other thing that really concerns me, and I think probably I would think concerns you the most, is for all the shit that they've put Damian Sandow through for the last year, they finally latched onto a gimmick that got him over and really worked. And as much as I know Sandow's better than The Miz, once you split them, what does Sandow go back to? Right? And I think that's, like, another big problem. Where's this? This could be like a quick revitalization of Sandow's career, but once he goes separate ways from Miz, what does he resort to after that?
The problem with Sandow is that his gimmick was working. I mean, that was the biggest head scratcher that I had, is that his gimmick was working. Whenever I wear my Sandow shirt, people that have no idea with wrestling, they look at the shirt, they're like, "What is that?" I'm like, "What?" And then they're like, "Oh, that's a cool shirt. What is that?" I'm like, "Well, he's a wrestler." And they're like, "What?" I'm like, "Well, he's a wrestler, and, you know, this and this," and, you know, I don't get into it too much, but that gimmick, I mean, I want him to come out in that robe again. I want him to say silence and you're welcome and stuff. But that gimmick was working. So I've already resigned myself to the fact that they've already took that and just said, okay, forget it, when they didn't have to do it. And I do kind of agree with you, like, where does Sandow go after that? The biggest thing with Sandow is that I don't think people realize the worker that he is either. I mean, he's a great worker as well. When he was, I mean, he had good matches with John Cena, which is very hard to do, especially with everything that's up against him with doing a program with John Cena. But he was, and then they just made him lose all the time when he was good in the ring. He had you know, some good high spots.
They made him win the Money in the Bank briefcase, and then proceeded to lose for 3 months straight.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean. I wanted to get your take on it. You know, I didn't even think about the tag team take that you're going with, but I agree with it.
Yeah, and to make it even worse, they're doing the same thing with Goldust and Stardust.
Yeah, well, I heard that Goldust is gonna stop, and he's gonna work behind the scenes. He's gonna be like an agent or something like that.
And after they have their blow off match, and then
I don't want to see a blow off match between them anyways. I think that's pretty stupid, you know, to do that.
I'll say this. I think. They have for several years wanted to have a match between Cody and Goldust at WrestleMania, and I think that not just When I say they, I'm not talking about WWE Creative. I mean, those two guys want that match. So if Goldust is ready to go back to being behind the scenes and that's the way that those two guys want to do it, I'm fine with that. But, I, again, even more so, if you have to do that and that's what they want, fair enough. But then you don't turn around and then split up another tag team when you really only have, like, four viable teams anyway. Now you're down to, like, two, and that doesn't include the Ascension.
Just so you're talking about, you don't think Mizdow and I hate even saying Mizdow, but you don't think that the Miz and Mizdow have legs for 3 months. I don't think the Rose Brothers have legs for 3 months for that feud either. You know, it's going to be a feud that nobody wants to see because they like that tag team. The only way, and this will kind of lead into what I want to talk about as well. I think if I was booking, if I was the booker, I would have it where they get on a program with Ascension for the next 3 months. You know, they win some, they lose some.
They is Cody and
Cody, yeah, Goldust and Stardust, and then in the end, then you have your payoff match between Goldust and Stardust at WrestleMania. Ascension comes in, you know, so say Stardust beats Goldust and Ascension comes in and starts beating up on Goldust or whatever it is, or whoever they pick and start beating up on him, makes one of the, and you have maybe like 2-3 weeks before where Goldust and Stardust are just undercutting each other, like really stuff you never expect brothers to do, you know, and just like get a ton of heat, you know, either from Goldust or from Stardust where they play this monster heel. And, you know, Ascension comes in at the end of the match of WrestleMania and they start beating up on the heel or the face or whatever it is, and then you have one of the brothers come in and start, you know, standing up and start fighting, and then you bring out Dusty and have Dusty come in and start, you know, doing his bionic elbows and stuff, and then you end the show like that. I mean, that's like a feel good kind of to wrap up that story. Then Goldust can go in the back. I mean, that's a perfect opportunity to do that. That's what I'd want to see, and that leads into Ascension too, because what do you think of Ascension now? I mean, I think just follow along a little bit, okay? I mean, let me be the Pied Piper and you're the rat, and I'm leading you out of the town and stuff or anything. They're not, with Stardust and Goldust, they're not that bad. And I'm not saying that they're the greatest tag team and they work in the sandus, but it at least storytelling is starting to come in a little bit. And I haven't been, you know, you're showcasing them while still kind of extending a story between the two brothers. It's not like when they come out and go like, oh, I don't want to see this match. It's like, I'm starting to watch the matches. I still don't like them, but they're serviceable now. I mean, what do you kind of think about that?
Is this in the Adam Rose vein?
it's a little bit better than the Adam Rose vein, but what I'm saying is that they're serviceable now.
Yeah, but the problem for me is that's their ceiling. Their ceiling is to be a serviceable team. They're never going to be some legendary team or some team that's going to be able to carry that division. And big pat on the back here. You had a good match with Cody and Dusty. I mean, if you can't have a good match with Cody and Dusty, then there's a serious problem here. So, I mean, I'll give them that credit.
The biggest problem I saw in that match was the smaller guy from Ascension, right? Cody's bigger than that guy is, you know. And then the big guy, he's not that bigger than Goldust. I mean, right. I think Kim and Goldust are about the same size.
I think he's got a lot more mass than Goldust, but height wise, yeah. No, and that's what I was saying. I mean, X-Pac's bigger than the smaller guy. You gotta come up with a better finisher. That's all I gotta say. That finisher is terrible. It's not terrible as a move, but for them, it's ridiculous that the way you're trying to make that team, that's gonna be the way that they're gonna finish matches. I just think it's silly. That said, it was a watchable match. I have no. It is what it is. There's not much to say. They didn't impress me. I didn't feel like they took a step backwards. The match was fine. But I still don't see any money in those guys. That's about all there is. But I think before I so rudely cut you off before. I mean, I think there is a tag team that we could talk about, and that's Cesaro and Kid. So, I don't know if you had a question or whatever it was, but, I mean, I think that team is working. And I think Natalya is actually, I think she's looking pretty good right now, to be honest. But
why would you have to name her?
Well, I don't know. That just, you know, there's been a lot of Natalya bashing from one of the two people in this podcast in the past.
Is it for me or from you?
Not for me.
Okay, never me.
But I think she's even working.
When have I bashed Natalya? I never bashed her for a while. Well, she's boring. Yeah, she was boring for a while.
Yeah, I think she works as their manager.
But look wise, I never had a problem with that. She's nice to look at.
Yeah, well,
she's easy on the eyes.
She did something. Some change recently that she's looking even a little bit better than she had been in the past. Maybe it's the attire as opposed to her in the ring gear, but she's doing it for me right now.
Well, I want to bring up, so we're talking about this tag team with Cesaro and Kid, and the funny thing is what has made them a good tag team isn't because they're having great tag matches. It's the singles matches that they're doing. I mean, it's doing two things. It's like it's showcasing whatever Uso brothers is. I still don't know who's married to who. The last match, the singles match they had, I thought it was a very good match, like a really entertaining match. And then I thought Kid is shining with not even wrestling. So they're making a name for themselves in an unconventional way, where you have two guys that are, I think, better singles guys than they're given credit for. They pair them up together, but instead of having, you know, tag teams, you know, with them pairing up, like New Age Outlaws, right? Both of those guys were single guys, and then they became tag team guys, and all they did was tag team, and they were having great matches. And granted, it was against Terry Funk and Mankind, and that's when they really started making a name for themselves in the beginning. But they went full on force with being a tag team and being a good tag team. Where with this one, they're a tag team, but they're making a name for themselves with singles matches, and at the same time, the Usos are showing what they can do singles wise too. I really liked that match, and what I really liked was at the end when the Usos lost or whatever it was, and Kid comes in and does a drop kick to the head to the other brother. You know, it just works really well.
Yeah, I mean, I think like everything those guys do makes sense, right?
What guys?
Kid and Cesaro, right? Like you know, sometimes like you're waiting for. Like there's like a weird spot at the end where you can tell like the guys just stand there waiting to get attacked from behind and it takes 30 seconds to happen. Like every time, like when after they win a match, they want to do something underhanded and dirty, like dude, they do it in a really logical sense. It happens really quickly when the guy's not looking. So I just think like it's not even ring psychology because it's not even necessarily part of the matches. Sometimes
it's just giving heat.
Yeah, and they do a great job of it. And
because that match when Cesaro wins. You got all the heat you need right there, right? Because he won the match because Kid, you know, interfered. And then Kid comes out of nowhere and gets more heat on top of that.
And then it just runs away,
yeah,
right?
It works out really good.
Yeah, I think it worked really well. Yeah, so I like that team quite a bit.
The problem that I have, which really isn't a problem, but I'm sitting here watching Kid and Cesaro as a tag team. I was like, man, like, I just wish Chris Hero, I'd rather see Chris Hero than Kid. But Kid is slowly starting to kind of change my mind about that, especially with that last spot that he did.
Yeah, well, Kid's problem has never been in the ring. So there's no surprise to me that this works. But no, I thought the exact same thing. And I mean, I was saying this a year ago, just bring Chris Hero up to the main roster and let him and Cesaro do their thing. It's not a surprise to me. Like, I mean, Kid was... He's a former tag team champion, and you know, Davey Boy Smith Jr. I think it sounds like he's having a pretty solid run in New Japan. I never was a huge fan of his when they were. I liked the concept of the team and everything, but I was not really impressed.
But it was vanilla. You know,
it was very vanilla, yeah. Right? And so, but having Kid in with another guy who, as much as we have been exposed to him as a singles guy in WWE. I mean, most of Cesaro's background is as a tag team wrestler, so they have instant chemistry. Two guys that really can work with anybody. And then the other thing that's a kind of a nice dynamic too is like, so you got Kid who's a smaller guy, really athletic. Then you got Cesaro who, like, you think of him as a big wrestler because of the power that he has, even though he's still pretty small and athletic, I guess, relatively speaking. So you got, like, this kind of powerhouse guy in still a really athletic body that matches really well with what Kid does. And just as an aside, too, I think they... they've kind of, they're about 50-50 on really connecting with that double team finisher, that, that suplex neck breaker that they do. But I think within a couple of weeks, when they get it down exactly as they want to, that's going to be one of the more impressive finishes that they're out there.
Written in the sentence.
I can't go that far.
Yeah, no, they kind of snuck up on everybody, you know, because it was, when they first started, it was like, okay, they're getting impaired because they have nothing to do with these two guys, but they've really taken off with it. They've bought into it, and it has more of like an organic feel, and they're getting good heat, and it's not forced heat, you know, and that's what I really like, is like when you try to, you know, I'll bring up the New Age Outlaws again, when they first kind of started as a team, they had a lot of forced heat, you know, that with kind of, they would, I think they both had guitars or something like that. They would hit two people with guitars and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, and then I think what really put them over the top was, their program with Terry Funk and Mankind. And then the what kind of set them all up was putting both of those guys in a dumpster and throwing the dumpster off the stage. And then they were made after that. I'm not saying that this match with that drop kick does the same thing, but it's getting there. Mm-hmm. And it just really shows, you know, Kid to me has always kind of been like a guy where, you know, like I would like create a wrestler, you know, I'm like, well, let me try making Tyson Kidd. And I look at kind of his top 10 moves that our boy does,
Suicidal Dragon.
Yeah. And his top 10 moves, they're all like weak little moves, you know, like high flying little kicks here and there. But now, I mean, he's legitimate, you know. I mean, he's still, it's a nice dynamic because of what you said. He's the high flyer, but he's kind of a tweener, and he doesn't have a lot of power moves. And then you have Cesaro, which is a rough and tumble style, but then Cesaro can pull stuff out of the hat too. And that uppercut's always cocked, ready to go. And that the uppercut that he did when one of the Usos was coming off with a high body, yeah, yeah. It was just epic, dude. It was great.
Yeah. Well, even like the element to adding the Cesaro swing with Kid coming out with, yeah, the drop kick, like even that, like it lets him do the swing again, and it's a really good creative double team, and Kid pulls it off really well. So that really works. That kind of to you went with the New Age Outlaws comparison about, like, you know, something coming natural as opposed to being forced. I mean, you know, just so recently as to the Real Americans, right? I mean, I thought, like, the team itself of Swagger and Cesaro was a team with a ton of potential, but it was a completely forced gimmick that didn't make any sense. Having Cesaro, it really limited what Cesaro could do as a character, and having him with the We the People and all that stuff was just, again, like, the team was really good. I thought you could have gone somewhere with those two guys as partners. I thought they could have been champions, and I would have been fine with it, but the gimmick was never right from the start.
Yeah, I was never buying that tag team. You know, I mean, I think towards the end of
in the ring, though, they were
yeah, in the ring, they were fine. I mean, and towards the end, I was kind of going, okay, this might work, but me caring to see a match from them, it was a fast forward, you know, and I would fast forward those two guys in the ring because the gimmick wasn't working, it felt forced. These two guys, when they first got together, in Kid and Cesaro, fast forward button was going on a little bit, but now it's like, okay, I'm not fast forwarding it now. Part of that has to do with the Usos, because I know the Usos can put on a good match. I kind of have a rule that I won't fast forward any Usos match, and so it's just kind of the right type of timing too. Like, they put them with the right people, putting them with the Usos, even though they don't deserve to go against the Usos because the Usos are the tag team champions and this team just started. But since I watched the Usos, I'm starting to watch these guys and just kind of look at them, you know, and not judge them right away, and I slowly started to like them, and you know, the tag team division is so thin that, you know, they're probably the second best tag team going right now, and they're probably the second most sought after tag team that I'm going to probably watch.
There are only like three tag teams.
Yeah, yeah. But it still says a lot, you know. I mean, it still shows that
even
if you only have three tag teams, the tag team division is okay right now because you have the Usos, and now you have this team that's slowly kind of coming along.
Yeah, well, I would kind of take it the other direction and say, even if you had, like, a division that was six teams deep, they would be right at the top of it because they're that good. So, I mean, I'd be fine if you built a tag team division around those two teams and the Usos and bring in a couple others.
So can you believe we're an hour in already?
No.
Yeah. So, is there anything else you want to go, or you want to make it a quick exit with our?
I'll ask one real quick question, just because I've been thinking about it over the last couple of weeks, and we can throw it out there, and if it takes a couple minutes, good. If it doesn't, we can move right on. Has the super kick gone the way of the DDT? There was a time when we were kids,
yeah.
No one got up off of a DDT.
Yeah.
And in like the heyday of one Shawn Michaels, the super kick came to be known as this legitimate finisher. But now, like, as much as it's a good kick, it's like everybody in every match does three of them. And it's just like, it's kind of like it's devalued a move that was something special at one point.
It has gone the way of the DDT. Are you upset that do you think it should be protected more? And here's the thing with it. So like
slightly.
So the thing that like Luke Harper did like he kind of did kind of like his own version of the super kick. Still very good. Dolph right now is probably the guy that does it the best.
I think the Usos have the best.
Usos do it. Yeah, you're right. Because right when I said Dolph, I thought it was the Usos.
Del Rio had a really good super kick in his time. Like I don't think I see a match where somebody doesn't do one. Rollins has a pretty solid super kick, and I'm not saying it has to be like a protected finisher at this point, but I just think
it mirrors the DDT in a lot of ways. And what I'm trying to say with that is, if you look at it, so the DDT, Jake the Snake had the best DDT, and then guys like The Rock started doing it, and then a lot of Japanese wrestlers started doing it. When the DDT started becoming popular as a move to do, Jake wasn't around. Same thing with the superkick. Now that the superkick it's a popular move to do, Shawn Michaels isn't around to do it. And to me, it's not like Shawn Michaels had the best superkick. It's not like if you look at Jake the Snake's DDT, it wasn't the best DDT, but the setup for it was really good. You know, he had a really rough DDT, and he had his DDT was his own. Where every other DDT kind of goes by the wayside. Now, with the superkick, it's a different move where a lot more athletic guys in their prime can do it better than Shawn Michaels can do it now, or probably even did it when he was doing a Sweet Chin Music. But yeah, it's gone by the wayside. I don't know if it's a bad thing. It's different because your finishers now. It's so many guys are doing so many high spots now where it's not like a major finisher like it used to be. Shawn Michaels really kind of showed how great it could be, just the way Jake did. But the thing is that people aren't getting pinned off of those super kicks. Sometimes they get off the Usos, sometimes they'll pin off of it, but it's within the storytelling, so that's not why I have a problem with it. But the thing is like even with the DDT, when Jake does a DDT, you know it's over because that's his move. When The Rock started doing it, or when some of the other Japanese guys started doing it, or even some guys from WCW, the Cruiserweights were doing it, they weren't getting pins off of it.
Right.
I think that the last guy to use it as a finisher was Arn Anderson, but he did a totally different DDT. I mean, he had a nice DDT going, too. Right.
You're not talking about, like, double underhook DDT?
No, I mean, like straight DDT. Yeah, he had a DDT where...
No, not him. I mean, like, people... Because, like, Dean uses a version of a DDT as a finisher.
Yeah, the double unarmed.
Which Mankind was doing before.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think the business is worse for it, but...
No, I'm not trying to say that at all. It's just... It was a move that had, like, a certain sort of impact because, you didn't see it too often, and whether you got a finish or you got a false finish, like, at least there was, like, some, like, anticipation when it happened. But now, like, I don't get through a match where I don't see six of them. And, like, Cole still thinks that each one of them is going to be a three count where, like, I know no one gets pinned off a super kick anymore, right?
Yeah. It's probably, like, the same way as the drop kick, too. So it's not like, it wasn't like the DDT was the first kind of move that everybody started doing. I remember jumping Jim Brunzel's DDT was like a finisher.
Drop kick,
didn't it? Yeah, the drop kick, yeah. But then you had guys like Perfect do it that did it way better than Brunzel did. And Dolph, great athlete. Dolph has a great standing DDT. I mean, his DDTs are good.
You talking about his DDT or his drop kick?
His drop kick. Yeah, yeah. But everything that Dolph does is good. I don't know. It has gone by the way of the DDT. The super kick has come by with the DDT. I'll start having a problem if if Stone Cold Stunners, if Stunners are, you know, if Stunners start, you know, getting to the foray of what a DDT used to be and what it is now, I'd have a
power bombs going that way. It's a big problem for me. But
It's changed though. I mean, the wrestling's changed. I mean, in the late '80s, a power bomb you never saw it before.
But I still think a power bomb should hold weight, especially in the absence if you have a no DDT, a no pile driver rule. Then I think you should elevate the impact of a power bomb.
But nobody does a power. I mean, I think Cena does a power bomb, right?
Not really.
But you know what I'm saying,
Harper.
That's true. Harper has a nice sit-up.
Reigns has the ability to powerbomb.
Yeah.
He doesn't do it anymore now that he uses a spear.
Yeah.
But he has powerbomb in his bag of tricks. Rollins has that running powerbomb, which is pretty sick.
Yeah, taken from one Ultimo Dragon. What move would you want to see kind of come back into style? And what move are you missing? What move do you miss the most? From the days of yore of us watching wrestling as little kids,
I guess we say take the pile driver off the table because that's a given. Or
we have to take the pile driver off the table.
So at least in the WWE, no one does it anymore. Austin Aries has a sick brainbuster, so I would like to see like. A couple of it, like Eddie Guerrero, and I'm thinking WWE, no one's been doing it since Eddie, but Eddie with the Brain Buster slash, back in the day, the Ghostbuster, that was a sick finish for people that could do it right.
Which Coco Beware did. He had a tight Ghostbuster, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not as good as Eddie's, and Austin Aries has a really good one, too.
Yeah, I kind of miss any type of cutter. You know, I like cutters.
Orton rocks the cutter.
Yeah, and there's some guys that do. Who I think Reigns does an Osaka cutter, right? So someone does like an Osaka, or I don't know, but I wouldn't mind seeing some fireman carry cutters and stuff. You know, I kind of miss the cutters. So those are what I kind of miss. I also like any diamond cutter type variation. I'm a big cutter guy, so any type of cutter I would like to see that. And I think anybody that comes in and starts doing some really nice cutters.
You know, this will break your heart even more, but you know who's probably got the best cutter these days? Chris Hero.
Yeah.
Chris Hero, have you seen on his, like, so he essentially does the diamond cutter about 100 times better than Paige.
Yeah.
Because he does the if I can channel my Gorilla Monsoon, the cravat lock, and then he goes cravat into the cravat cutter is what it is, but it's really good, dude.
And where do you see Christian do this cutter?
Just
on the internet?
Yeah,
or
Suicidal.
Suicidal?
Suicidal Dragon. Like, look up that's a Chris Hero moveset.
Well, it's funny, like, Chris Hero, when he was younger, he just had all these high spot moves.
Oh, I know. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, not even because, like, Suicidal always keeps it to a top 10, but if you look at some of the other ones, if you're looking on YouTube and you kind of scroll down and see, like, sometimes there's, like, 5 straight minutes of, like, the best moves of Chris Hero, like 5 or 10 minutes, and yeah, there's some insane high spot moves this guy has. I think the best one for me personally, of the ones I saw, I really loved. He does this electric chair drop into a. I don't even know how to describe it. Like, basically, turns it into something similar to a Michinoku driver, but it starts off as an electric chair. And then he brings him down. Yeah, electric chair driver. Let's call it that. Not nice. To go all Mike Tenay.
Good here. Suicide electric chair, La Plancha driver. So let's get into the Golden Mike, unless I think we're good. The other guy that has a really great moveset that nobody really knows about is Seth Rollins as well. The guy has crazy high spot.
You're talking about like as Tyler Black, like his old school?
Yeah. So let's get into Golden Mike, and then we'll start hitting our segments real fast.
Leaving Sacramento, Sacramento, there I go. Leaving Sacramento, Sacramento, there I go. They got some fat ass women there in Rocket Gonna, just they know. Well, I might take a plane. I might take a train. How do you people live here? You must be insane. I'm leaving Sacramento.
Sacramento, I won't stay. Check this out, check this out.
Check it out.
But I'll be sure to come back when the Lakers beat the Kings and Men.
Number one with a bullet.
So first of all, that's probably one of the only few times where the King actually adds to the performance.
I'm not going to say only time, but I think that goes back to when King was a heel announcer and he was actually a decent announcer. So yeah, it is like a window into the past when, because they're actually King was good. There was a time when King was good as a broadcaster. That time's long gone, but that time did exist. Okay, so this is as we've kind of said. The overall time period that this promo happened was one of the worst times for The Rock, and this is really close to when he ultimately left. But this, I feel, is one of his very best promos, and it just shows like this whole ability that The Rock had to be like he was trying to play a heel character, and everywhere he was going, he was still getting cheered for the most part. And then you go into Sacramento, which. You know, we live in Northern California, so if anyone doesn't know, I mean, there's basically Sacramento's got one thing, which is the Kings. So he comes out, they're cheering him. He starts ragging on their town and the team, which is the only thing that they have. And then, but really, he can only elicit like 30 seconds of boos, because as soon as the segment over, they're back to cheering him again. And he was just kind of speaks to the popularity of that the man had, to where there was nothing that guy could do that people still wouldn't get behind him at the time. Well, and it wasn't even like he wasn't even really good or super creative in terms of like relative for what his career was at that point in time.
Yeah, this was kind of like his swan song for like a really good promo, because even when he comes back now, his promos are fine, but it's a shell of what they used to be, because he doesn't have the time to really develop his character anymore with what he was doing. Even at the end, so even when he's saying like they have fat ass women and stuff, they're still cheering him. And then the second he says, when the Lakers beat the Kings in May, just crazy boos, right? But then at the end, they still kind of cheer, because they know that he just got them, right?
Yeah.
Before we get into it anymore, I have to give a shout out to the producer, because my second stepmom that my dad married, I'll just leave it at that. And but she's a huge Kings fan. Who was like this, like, they've had like a bunch of big men, not the guy that's good now, DeMarcus Cousins, but there's like another kind of big man during that time that everybody thought was going to be good. And the reason why I bring this up is because I had to...
Lionel Simmons?
It wasn't Lionel Simmons. I like Simmons, but it was some other guy. It's like some no-name big man, right? And the only reason why, and this is why it's even better, because I can't figure out who this guy is, but...
Bonner?
I had to go up there, and he's like the center. I mean, he's just like a really like vanilla center, and everybody thought he was going to be good, but he sucked, and I don't even think he plays anymore.
Brad Miller?
What? No, it wasn't Brad Miller. It's after the Kings had their run, so it's like during the downtime of like probably like 2007, 2008, 2009 or something like that. And the only reason why I say that is because I had to go up there because I had to do a reset at some grocery store. In the morning, so I drove up there at night, and I went to the guest room. There's like a signed autograph of this guy. I'm like, are you kidding me? And like, you know, they're probably, you know, she's probably all excited that she has a signed autograph of an 8x10 glossy of this guy. And this guy like just sucks. I'm like, you can't even sell on eBay for like 50 cents. It costs more for the shipping than it would to actually like what the thing was paid for. But my poor brother has to sit there and watch them watch the Kings. And, you know, my dad's supportive, you know, of his wife and stuff like that. And, you know, they go all crazy. You know, she goes all crazy for the Kings, and they suck. So I'm watching the Warriors game. I believe it was last night. And
Spencer Hawes?
It wasn't Spencer Hawes, but Spencer. It's getting there. It's like type of name of Spencer. He's weak. And the second that you find out he's like, that guy sucks. But you don't remember him because he sucks. But my poor brother has to watch these games, and like he'll say something like, he's no, like, you know, like something to the effect of like, well, he's no like LeBron James, and she'll go like, who's that? you know, just that type of fan, right? And so I'm watching the Warriors game last night. Did you tape the Mavericks game tonight? Do you know what
it's
happened?
Recording?
Okay. So I'm watching the game last night, and then I see Tyrone Corbin on the sideline. And so I text my brother. I'm like, wait a minute, Tyrone Corbin is the head coach? Like, yeah, because they got rid of the other guy, who was actually, like, the coach was actually, is a guy from the Warriors, right?
Malone, yeah.
And he was actually a decent coach, and Cousin gets hurt, and they fire him. I don't understand it. And I was like, Tyrone Corbin's the coach? He's like, yeah. And I was like, what, Blue Edwards wasn't available, or what? And you could just tell, he responded back, he's like, well, there you go. So you can just tell.
They wanted Thurl Bailey, but he was satisfied in retirement.
I like Thurl Bailey. That's how I wouldn't besmirch Thurl. Hey,
what about Jose Ortiz? Do you want to coach him?
Well, he's Puerto Rican. You know, they can't have a Puerto Rican guy coach an NBA team. But
they can have a Filipino.
who's that?
Spoelstra.
Yeah, but he's with the Heat.
Yes. World champion coach, by the way.
He's a world champion coach. Yeah.
Puerto Rican world champion coaches out there.
But I just feel for the producer over here that has to watch the Kings all the time. And I think one time he's like, I got to watch these Kings all the time. And this is when the start of the season, I was like, well, I got to watch the Warriors, man. He's like, man, screw you. So, but that promo, you know.
My man, John Tran, who's from Sacramento and now lives down here, he has paid for an extra cable box at his parents' house that he has down here just strictly so he can watch the Sacramento Kings games on local TV.
And that team is like watching the Warriors team when they had like Sprewell as the only guy after they traded away Owens and Weber, and it was just Sprewell and like a bunch like Ray O's and all these guys. And I remember I understand it because I used to watch the Warriors religiously because I liked Sprewell a lot. But man, those teams sucked, and it's like I'm watching this team. I'm like, how did this team even score 90 points, dude? I'm like, they're terrible, man. So it's just I just wanted to give him a shout out real fast because I feel for him having to watch the Sacramento Kings, seeing how the Kings should be at least a one time NBA champion. But that's neither here nor there.
All right, well, I think this tips the scales because you know for the next segment here. As we go into Hall of Kayfabe, I had two names in mind, and you know, since we're talking about how your fellow Regan's getting short shift in terms of NBA head coaching opportunities, I'm gonna induct a Regan into the Hall of Kayfabe right now.
Don't tell me Savio Vega.
No.
Okay.
But that thought did cross my mind.
Carlito.
Yeah.
Carlito. Yeah. Oh hell yeah, dude.
Yeah. So I don't know what it was. I mean, I'm sure there was some sort of backstage heat that got him out of the WWE early, but, dude, this guy was really tapping into being a great heel character, excellent on the mic, really good in the ring, too, just had a ton of charisma. The whole, like, spitting the apple thing, like, seems, like, pretty stupid from the outlook, but just kind of made that thing work. Had a good look with that fro.
He wasn't the first one to do that, though.
Did his dad do it?
No, Riz Ramon did it in his vignettes when he first came to WWE.
And he spit an apple on somebody?
He was like, he was doing this whole thing. He's like, hey, listen to me, Riz Ramon. And he's at a farmer's market, and he picks up an apple, and he bites into it. And the guy's like, hey, he's like, you got to pay for that. He's like, you mean to tell that Riz Ramon has to pay for an apple? And then, so if you think about it, he spits the apple in the guy's face, but a lot of similarities between the Razor Ramon character and even with the delivery of the talking.
Right, the cadence of the speech.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I thought Carlito was awesome. I thought he's a guy that he could have been like your five-time Intercontinental Champion type guy, best worker on the show, put him in matches with anybody, put him in tag team matches when Primo came out. That was still a viable team. I just felt really bad, or I don't know exactly what happened. My gut feeling tells me, like, he stood up for himself, and the fact that he wasn't being used very well, and for some reason they decided they should get rid of him. But Carlito's awesome.
Yeah, I caught him on the tail end because that's when I started watching him. Right, probably about 2 months before he left, and I know he teamed up with what's her name, who's the girl that you really like.
Mendez. Eva Mendez.
Not Eva Mendez, but the one that teamed with Ted Jury, and she was in WCW. Come on, dude. She posed nude with Sable and Playboy and stuff.
Tori Wilson,
yeah. Yeah, so I know that they had a nice little run there. I thought he was a good character. I liked his backbreaker The one that Del Rio took.
A lot of people have taken that.
Yes. It's gone, that backbreaker's gone the way of the super kick.
Sure.
Yeah, you like that, huh?
Yes.
But yeah, definitely, I know he's still, I know he's still holding the Puerto Rican Federation over there down. He works for them. I mean, don't feel too bad for him because he, you know, he's back home and they're still drawn over in Puerto Rico and stuff. So
I feel more bad that I don't get to see him.
Yeah.
And I don't know that he ever, I think he kind of just went back to Puerto Rico. He never really, that I know of, like, did a lot of stuff on the independent scene after he left WWE, which I'm sure he would be extremely popular on if he wanted to go that route. But yeah, it's more, I just feel bad because I don't get to see the guy. I feel bad because I think he didn't get his due. And while there is, like, a really good lineage and tradition of good Puerto Rican wrestlers, right? So it's like we talked about a lot. We talked about, like, the
you know who his dad was, right?
Yeah, Carlos Colon. But, like, the Samoan or Polynesian wrestlers never really not getting a lot of, big pushes for as much contributions as they've made. And then, you know, a lot of African-American wrestlers, too. Puerto Rican wrestlers are another minority that really gets overlooked. You know, like, everyone knows who the luchadors are, but they don't really understand, like, that Puerto Rico is pretty big in wrestling as well. So for him to kind of have, you know, gotten a good run in a time where, you know, wrestling was still pretty close to one of its, like, high points of popularity, would have been nice to see that guy. And especially with the love that WWE has for having, like, second, third generation wrestlers, I think there's just a ton of stuff that could have been done with Carlito. I think he was a guy that was a great heel, but it was very easy for people to like also, so he could have, you know, he could go either direction just as well. I just think that he could have done a lot more if given the chance in WWE.
Well, it's funny how you're knocking your segues out of the park, and I'm going to knock this segue out of the park too. So I just saw Carlito recently, and it was because it was the Greatest Families of Wrestling, and he was the host. And it was just kind of in the beginning of his character. So it was kind of cornballish, but at the time it worked really well because it was kind of like another type of Razor Ramon type character, and it worked really well. But it's just kind of funny to watch him. So the Hart family, they were cool, you know, just stuff like that. But, I spit in the face of people aren't cool, and he had that nice anime shirt, you know, with him with the green apple and stuff. And then he could get it done in the ring, too. But seeing how... I just bring up the WWE Network, and we just have our last segment saying which matches to watch and stuff. And you brought up the New Japan last week. I rewatched the 1998 Royal Rumble, or Survivor Series, which was, of course, the Survivor Series where The Rock turned as a corporate champion.
Okay.
I watched all 3 hours of it, and I suggest, you know, because we talked about, you know, Macho Man when we did our Macho Man podcast, which... not a lot of people listen to that one, you know, which is kind of bothersome for me. Our Roman Reigns one, I think in 2-3 days, we had like 40 people listen to it.
One from last week?
Yeah. So I think we only like 20 people listen to the Macho Man one. But we talked about the tournament for the title with the Macho Man, and we compared it to the Rock's one. Good pay-per-view through and through. I mean, you had some, you know, it's funny because... the production value is really bad.
Yeah.
But if you want to see, like, McMahon really took over as a heel character, and they were out to get Stone Cold and The Rock, and, you know, they screwed, you know, Stone Cold over, this, that, and this. They had Undertaker versus Kane, which was kind of like a, you know, that was kind of a not that good, but they had the Man's Man in the tournament. They had X-Pac in the tournament. And they had the Big Boss Man, which is really good to see. And they even had Ken Shamrock as well.
Yeah. And the Boss Man was, like, he was pretty well protected at that time. Like, being the Boss Man was a big deal at that point.
Yeah. And, well, yeah, because he was the muscle of the corporation before the corporation became the corporation. But just really, really nice, you know, really good storytelling. And the turn at the end, you know, people forget that The Rock, you know, the only thing watching it this time around is that if someone was just to watch it cold turkey, they wouldn't really get the significance of The Rock turning, because The Rock got a lot of good heat when he was, I think it was like the Raw before. And I remember I was at my school paper at the time, and they all knew that I liked wrestling. And the editor in chief was like, she was a female and didn't know anything about wrestling, but she remembered, she's like, did you see that part where The Rock said, I'd rather, I can't even think of what he said, but he's like, I'd rather kiss the people's ass instead of, be your, or something, whatever it was that he said. But that's how much heat he had, good heat going in. And I know he had a face. In order for him to be in the tournament, he had to fight Mark Henry and D'Lo Brown to get into that tournament. And just everybody thought, everybody knew that Austin wasn't gonna win, but everybody thought The Rock was gonna win. And I remember you told me, I think, you're like, oh, did you see the pay per view? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, no, I didn't see it. I'm like, but The Rock, it might have been you or Mike. He's like, yeah, the Rock won. It was you. I was like, the Rock is a champion. I'm like, oh, that's great. He's like, nah. He's like, he's the corporate champion. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
I'm like, what? Nah, dude. I'm like, what's going on here? And then the next Raw, he kills it, and you start, then you're all full fledged going to the corporate champion. But that was like right before they really started taking over WCW. It was that's when I really started going to WWE instead of WCW. But just watching the whole thing, like the matches aren't all that great, and even like the response that The Rock was getting was kind of it was good. It wasn't as big as Austin, but the Rock, if you want to know what The Rock, to see like him as a corporate champion, it's that pay-per-view. And he was just great. Like it was a match, like, so Undertaker was with Paul Bearer, and Paul Bearer was kind of involving himself in, and The Rock was like flipping everybody off, and like flipping off the referee, flipping off people here. And then he looks at Paul Bearer, and he does like a gesture of like a big old fat stomach. He's like, you're all fat and stuff and everything like that. So just a really good pay-per-view.
No, I have to go back and watch that one then, because that sounds good. Yeah, or maybe at least just watch the turn for no other reason. I just let the kids see it.
And they had a three way tag team match for the title. It was New Age Outlaws, the Rockers, not the Rockers, the Headbangers, and then I think it was D'Lo Brown and maybe Mark Henry as well.
I can't believe you just brought up the Headbangers, man. You're still next week's Hall of Kayfabe. Go ahead.
Are you serious?
No.
Okay, good. Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to let me bring in Alex Wright, so.
I'm not gonna let you bring in Paul Roma either.
Yeah, apparently.
But it was funny. Some guy had a Headbangers sign. Like, he had a drawing of one of the Headbangers. I'm like, really? Did he spend that much time, drawing the Headbangers? But they were hot for a quick second, but it was just, and then Billy Gunn wins it with a pile driver. And I was like, oh, look, a pile driver. So, it was good, man. It was good to kind of see kind of like the Attitude Era, in its prime, and when WWE really started taking off, and then after that, man, the whole kind of, everybody likes to point at Austin, saying like Austin's the reason why they won. I would probably put up there that it was Austin, but it was really the program with Mankind and Rock to me that really started setting off the WWE winning that war. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't get a lot of, Mankind and Rock don't get a lot of credit for the whole kind of, because you had the Super Bowl match. You remember during the halftime of Super Bowl, so they don't give The Rock or Mankind a lot of credit for turning that company around as well.
I think Rock gets plenty of credit. Maybe Mankind doesn't get quite as much credit as he deserves. I think he gets credit for being kind of like the spark that started it all with the whole Shivani, don't turn your channel over there because Foley's going to win. So like that kind of cements his piece in making WWE back on top. But I think The Rock gets plenty of credit for making it happen. I don't necessarily hear people say it was only Austin, But like I think that's like that was the triumvirate at the time that really made everybody have to go watch WWE week in and week out again. And then Triple H, I'm sure, thinks it's him.
Yeah, it's always him. Well, it's funny. Like on Twitter, someone did a quick recap of the. We didn't even talk about the Triple H Austin podcast, which I didn't listen to. But basically, what it said was like. So, WWE is Vince, NXT is all me. And that's pretty much what he was saying. It was like, the reason why NXT is so good is because of Triple H. Which is straight garbage.
Well, I did watch the interview. And, but part of, before I started watching it, I was seeing how Twitter was kind of blowing up with, like, basically saying, like, he was throwing Vince under the bus. And, like, everything that was good was stuff that he did. And everything that was questionable, like, kind of implied that, like, that wasn't necessarily his choice. But yeah, he did go pretty hard on the fact that like he has, like, full say, and he can do whatever he wants to do in NXT, which that may well be the case. I don't know.
But the foundation of NXT is to me, is Willem Regal and Dusty Rhodes. I mean, that's really, like, the ideas and for the characters and stuff. It's very easy to poach off of that and say, well, let's, once the character's already developed and Triple H will go, like, well, let's have this guy do this, this guy do that. Well, the reason why he can do that is because of the work that those two guys do.
Sure. Definitely.
And William Regal is in that Survivor Series 1998 as the man's man.
Yeah.
With
his sleeveless flannel.
Yeah, with I think he was fighting X-Pac, and it was a fun match to watch, so. We're at Moose Scale number 96. We got four more until 100. Can you believe it?
No. That's quite a bit.
So we gotta do something special for that one. We gotta figure out what we want to do. So you gotta start writing stuff down on pen and paper and crumpled up paper and all that good stuff.
You mean fireworks or something like that?
What was the one that one time where? Oh, maybe we can put parentheses that everybody can see on the podcast. Remember that one?
Yes. Hey, so, producer, you've been warned 4 weeks in advance, so get to work on that.
Get to work on the parentheses. All right. So, Moose Scale number 96. We have Better Have My Donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. And once again, Better Have My Donuts' favorite thing is...
fake press.
There you go.
Yeah. Shake your funky ass, bitch.
Yo, we divide cakes to rise the stakes. Me and my apes die for papes. Bust heat and high for Jake. Up in the skyscraper, top of the world. Back is up against the wall. Gun brawl, kid, I end up for all life. Trying to stop the flow from flowing. Spotless rock blowing. Shots are blowing. Pop the sea line throwing. Waistline, the clock is showing. We keep it thugged out. Who not knowing? Get your knife blown.
Yo, Bob Digital and Cool G Rap. We set the booby trap. African Wiz with the gadgets. How the doobie rap. Derelict mind crabs. You rapping for a Scooby snack. Foul tongue bitch. You bound to lick my booty crack. Rebel pellets. Spray tech sound mixed with Amex. Every slap of my snare drum, son, could break necks. You get yanked up and spanked up, your face shaked up. Who the fuck raise your rank up? I blow your take up. Pop the lock on the cop handcuff. Pop a Dutch of dust, bust the jump up to snuff out the judge. Fuck a cell block, flat top caps in the mailbox. Terry Bone Bird, stash block in the nail shop. On the strip, took a sip, twist the L top. The guard you, son, feel like a third rail shot. The gold crossbone, durag, universal flag. Blast with the turbo charge, a purple herbal drag. Known for the W, carry a double two. In the shoe, I ain't snub rubber noodles in the bubble goo. Pulling soap in oil, hot heat with flame boil. Wu Tang slang, got bang, makes your brain coil. Shaolin gods, we know the stat cakes. Desert Queen Project, Sunday bake cakes. Uptown Pelon dogs, you make cakes. Cold Medina sons, they know in the J cakes.
We have a Wu Tang, let tubes bang. That's how we do things. That's how we move things. Super-